Welcome to On Tap with Corey and Ira, where they discuss Southern Minnesota breweries and beer. Here's your host, Corey Butler and Ira Carlson.
Welcome to On Tap with Corey and Ira, your bi-monthly exploration of Southern Minnesota beers and breweries. I am Corey Butler.
And I'm Ira Carlson.
And we're coming to you live on 95 The One, AM 1080 KYMN Radio. And if you're not catching us live in Northfield, Minnesota, you're probably listening to us online at ontapnorthfield.com or at our podcast platform partners like iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and a number of other places. We're everywhere, Ira.
Of course we are.
We're a damn big deal. Tell us what's coming up.
Yeah, no, we got a lot of fun stuff coming up in the show today. We're talking to John out of Ward House Brewery in Waseca. Not too far away, but far enough, a little bit of a drive. But it's a fun little spot, very small, very unique. We got a chance to stop only a couple weeks after he was open, so looking forward to kind of checking back with him and maybe tasting what he's bringing up and maybe talk about his singing career. We'll have to, that's a story to talk about as we get into the interview.
We'll save that for the interview.
Yep.
That was an experience, that's for sure.
All right. And then we, of course, have Andrew in with the style of the week. This week, I think we're talking a little sweet stout, so that'll be kind of interesting to hear from him.
So, speaking of enjoyment, we've got a great chat with John come up here from Ward House from Waseca, Minnesota. Stick around.
And now time for Beers of the Week, brought to us today by Firehouse Liquor of Dundas. Our first offering this week is out of Beaver Island Brewing in out of St. Cloud, Minnesota, Sweet Mist Chocolate Oatmeal Milk Stout. Yeah, this is definitely on the lighter side in the way of stouts. You know, the chocolate and milk kind of like soften it out a little bit. It's a little lighter on the palate, definitely coming in lighter on the ABV at about a 6.5%. Definitely very nice, easy drinking stout. Again, Sean's very excited about the Beaver Island Brewing being able to carry it because we talked about another one of their beers last week. So definitely a very good tasting beer here, crafted right, of course, in Minnesota. So I'm definitely liking this beer.
Yeah, Beaver Island's been doing some really good work out of St. Cloud. So it's exciting that they've made this way down. As you noted, it's a bit of a departure from what we were drinking earlier with the big stouts, the Imperial Stouts, the Irish Coffee Stout, which are big, bold, flavorful beers. There's definitely flavor in this. It's just, it's maybe hard to pick up a little bit. I mean, the oatmeal's in there, definitely. You feel a little of the chocolate. The lactose definitely comes through. You get that sweetness a little bit. But we're at a little bit of a disadvantage. It's our fault for the order in which we drank them, so we apologize to Beaver Island. But we had those big beers. This is still a solid beer. Beaver Island is definitely known for the quality beer it puts out. I've had this beer before. I enjoy it immensely. But coming off those bigger beers, it doesn't come through as strong.
Yeah, but at the same time, this is what you're going to want to put in your fridge. You're going to grab a six-pack of this nice beer in a 12-ounce can. It's more designed for at home, at your leisure, pairing it with some food.
Or in a bar just, if you're there.
But sitting there to enjoy this beer. I do enjoy this beer, but it's 6.5%, so it still has a little bit of heat, but not a whole lot. Very easy drinking. Definitely a good beer.
So the other offering we have is the Madtown Nut Brown from Ale Asylum. The third beer from Ale Asylum out of Madison, Wisconsin, we've had. This is a 5.5 ABV beer. Definitely a little bit sweeter, maybe a little bit thinner on the palate. It's a good, decent nut brown. It's not, you know, the best nut brown I've ever had, but I like it. But again, we're at a little bit of a disadvantage here. This is a departure from the big beers we had earlier. We also had that West Coast IPA, so probably not a fair assessment today to Ale Asylum and Beaver Island. And I think it's okay to be fair about that. Be frank about it.
Yeah, but that being said, I mean, I get where you're coming from. I like my nut brown a little bit more.
Sweet.
Yeah, I like it with a little bit more of a richer, full-bodied flavor. And it's not thin, but it's a lighter kind of a nut brown to it. And I think maybe that accounts for the 5.5%. That's still very good. You know, if I'm going to go with an Ale Asylum, I might go back to the Hopalicious because that was probably my favorite that I had, though, the Velveteen Habit that we had last week, really good. I'm not saying anything's wrong with Ale Asylum, but this one might not be the top of my list. But again, I am not a nut brown person. We've talked about it before. my vote for nut brown shouldn't be weighed as heavily as others just because it's not quite what I like to drink. But again, this is good. It's actually light, just not quite as full-bodied as I like in that style.
Would you go on record to say you are a nutty white person?
I might be, yes.
I think you are. What is interesting about this label, and they do a good job with Madtown, or Ale Asylum, I should say, with their labels. Depending on your religious affiliation, this might be somewhat offensive. I have no personal offense to this, but they've got centered, so the T is bigger and in the middle and resembles a cross, and there's two, I don't want to call them grave diggers, but at least two guys above there digging into the ground, which forms the T, and then there's the moon in the background. So I love this label. We occasionally talk about labels and stories associated with the labels and stories shared with the beers, and it's a fun label at the very least. It's a nice beer for sure, but I give two thumbs up to the label for sure.
Might go along with the tagline at the bottom, a supremely diggable nut brown
ale. There you go.
From Ale Asylum in Madison,
You're
Wisconsin.
Always paying attention to detail. Good for you. Where can we find these?
All right. No, they're both fun beers. If you want to try either one of these beers or any of the other beers we talked about in the last couple shows, including the other offerings out of Ale Asylum, they could be conveniently found at Firehouse Liquor in Dundas, south on Highway 3.
Look for that fire truck. Okay, we're coming to you live from the studio now with John Mansfield of Ward House Brewery. How's it going, John?
I'm pretty good. How are you doing?
Glad to have you in here. Thanks. Nice I'm doing well. Thank you. So why don't you tell folks who are listening where Ward House Brewery is located?
We're located at 111 Elm Avenue West in Waseca, Minnesota.
So let's pop that into the GPS and go for a drive, right?
Yep. It should pop right up. We're in there now.
Yeah, we don't often get specific addresses, so I kind of like that, especially in smaller towns. Where, although in smaller towns, you might be able to just happen upon it. Not that Waseca's tiny, but it's no Burnsville.
Yeah, no, it's no Burnsville.
The city's.
Yeah, if somebody told me downtown Waseca, it would have taken me a little bit because it was slightly off the side road, you know, so.
Yeah, I usually tell everybody. Well, yeah, we're right next to the VFW. So.
Everyone knows where the VFW is.
Yeah, you can't miss that.
Yeah, we even stopped there at the VF and had one while we were waiting for you to open up the last time we went down.
So what do we got? Waseca's about an hour south of the cities, right?
I'd say, about an hour south of the cities.
Depending who's driving?
Yeah.
So it's not too bad.
Hour 15.
But from Northfield's 45, 50.
Yeah, about 45.
Well, you just came here, so you know.
Yeah, I just came here. It's about a 45-minute drive from Northfield. So we're just south and west of Owatonna. Okay. So if you go down to Owatonna, and we're about halfway between Owatonna and Mankato.
It's the alternate route to Mankato if you don't want to take 60, which most people take because it's the quicker route. But.
Well, I'd argue that the other way is quicker because you have less stop signs. You're not going through all the small towns or especially as we're about to come on to farming time where you know, you're stuck behind all the tractors and stuff as they're getting out there to clear the fields. I'd stick with 35 and cutting across, but that's just me.
So all this spawned from where are you? Well, this is how you get there.
Yeah, this is how you get there.
This is Minnesota talk right here.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about the brewery. That's the big question. Obviously, why open a brewery?
Well, I've been passionate about making beer for years. I got into home brewing back in about 99, 2000. Just a neighbor got me into it, and that was really when I discovered beer. It was like he said, "I'm going to make an IPA." I said, "What's an IPA?"
Sure,
I don't know, I'm drinking
IPA. What's an IPA?
What's an IPA? So we did that, and I was hooked right away. I said, "Oh, this is great! I can avoid paying taxes and make my own beer on it." So I said that. Well, I'm all in. It's like beer at half price, but after several years, my wife and I kept having children. More and more.
Congratulations.
So I didn't think, yeah, you're welcome.
You look proud when you said that.
Oh, I am. I'm very proud. But it didn't allow me to brew all the time. I was running around doing soccer and football and basketball and all the other stuff that parents do. So they started getting older and I started brewing more. So I had more time to do that. And a couple of years ago, we moved down to Waseca from St. Paul. We were living on the west side. And I never would have thought of doing a microbrewery living up in the cities. It was just too expensive to get off the ground. There were too many of them already that I could go around the corner. So the idea hadn't even really occurred to me till we moved down to Waseca. And I said, well, there's nothing here. And we're 10, 13 miles away from the Owatonna, 20 miles away from Mankato. So
kind of a nice cross section.
Yeah. Yeah. So I said, well, you know, this might be a good opportunity if I can find a place and get it going. So we kind of looked into it, had to convince my wife. That took a good year. But she finally ceded to my desires that I wanted to open up a microbrewery. And so I looked at my finances and said, all right, well, we've got $25,000 to work with in my savings. And I said, if we can do it for $25,000, then we can get it off the ground. If not, then I will have just wasted $25,000. And so we managed to do it. So I looked around Waseca, came across a small business owner there who owns a print shop, who also owned this building behind his print shop. And as we were talking about the rent and everything, we came to an agreement that I would help him remodel some of his apartments that he had for rent, and he gave me the first few months
little trade
free. Yeah, that's what the trades are. So we did that, and that worked out. I remodeled the interior just myself, so it's not the most pristine workmanship or anything. I'm not the best at remodeling, but I did the best I could, and we got all the licenses and everything through. That took, I'd say, about 7 months, 7-8 months to get from the start to finish through all the licensing. And finally got the final stamp of approval from the state and all the other powers that be to start producing beer.
It's a long list.
It is. Yeah. There's the federal, the state, and the state, of course, doesn't always know which department they want to have the licensing go through, so that got thrown back and forth between the state and the Department of Agriculture. Mm-hmm. Finally, Department of Agriculture decided that they wanted most of the money from
the fees.
Yeah.
Building.
Yeah. And then you have to deal with, you know, you've got a production side and you've got the retail side. So then you've got two sides of that to have to deal with. And I've got a fairly small place. We can get about, I'd say, 35, 40 people in there comfortably. And I have a one-barrel system. I use two vessels. I designed it myself and just had it kind of custom made. I use two pumps to recirculate. And I'm all electric. So I've got the two PIDs there with the electric, basically, water heater.
For those elements who don't know, what's a PID?
PID. This is the temperature control for the boil kettle, and you can set it preset at like 150. You want to mash,
because like most things that are produced for consumption, it needs to be baked at the right temperature.
Yeah. Beer is the same way, and a small guy like me, I have a one barrel system, so I'm doing basically two kegs at a time, two and a half kegs. And that allows me a lot of opportunity to brew, which I love doing, but it's also a challenge to get consistency, because you've got temperature control and everything else. And with the equipment I'm working with, I manage to get that consistency that I'm shooting for each time. So that I really aim for that. And I try to keep 4 or 5 beers staple on tap all the time, in the same beer. So my Belgian Abbey, my Stout, my EPA, my Kolsch, those will always be on tap, and they should be very consistent. That's what I'm going for with those.
How often are you brewing?
I'll brew about twice a week, Mondays and Tuesdays usually. Depending on the weekend traffic, I may have to brew 3 times a week. So there's been a few weeks where I had to brew Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And then I do my kegging on usually Wednesday and Thursday.
What day do you take off?
Well,
Because you're open Friday, Saturday, Sunday, right?
Yeah, I'm open Thursday through Sunday, but the hours I'm open are 3 to 9:30 and Sunday 2 to 6. So, you know, Monday is a brew day, but brewing really only takes about 4 or 5 hours to get a batch brewed and, and down. You pitch the yeast and get everything cleaned up, and that's fun. I mean, it's not work to you. Yeah, it's not work. So that, and the kids are at school anyway. So,
oh, there you go.
So it's, you know, what else am I going to do during the day? On, you know, and if I need to take a day off, take a day off. You know, I mean, but you, with a small business, and it's just me with the help of my wife, and on the weekends she'll come and help. So if you show up, you're going to meet us. We're there.
So you mentioned trades. Correct me if I'm wrong. Maybe I'm misremembering this. Is that your background? You worked in trades of some sort?
Yeah, I'd worked in as a taper and a painter by trade.
Okay.
Yeah. Years ago, I learned that if you learn a trade, you'll never be unemployed.
Right.
And then I learned if you learn to make beer, you'll never be without friends. So,
so you have figured out both.
So ways. Yeah, I'll never be unemployed or without friends, as long as I can give away free beer.
If you can mud and tape, hats off to you. I love doing almost any project at home, but mudding and taping, I absolutely hate it. I suck at it. So,
well, that's what I was wondering when you said, you know, when you did the remodel, some of those things weren't your forte, and I thought I recalled that you did the trades, but obviously mudding and taping is very different from cutting wood and trim and building things out.
There's a skill to it.
There's a skill to all those things. It doesn't always translate from one discipline to the other. So that's why I was curious.
I'd say just perseverance.
See your way through?
Yeah.
And if it's not going the right way, just drink some beer.
Drink some beer or pray. Or a combination of both, I think. Sure. Like, that's that's what pretty much got me through the last year till we got to open up that and a big bottle of Tums. That was
and you have a unique space down there, too, because if I remember right, it's actually two separate buildings that had two separate purposes. What were they before you bought them, or they were merged together?
Well, there was a wall that, you know, just a to have offices on one side of it, and there was a barbershop on one side and a hearing aid clinic on the other. And before that, the building was originally built back in the late 30s, early 40s, and it was a place called Carl's Burgers. And so it was an old 40s burger joint.
So that's Carl Sr. then, right?
Yeah. No.
Got the burger joke in.
Yeah.
All right. There you go.
Boo.
Boo.
Yeah, that's all right.
Yeah,
totally derailed you.
No, that's okay. It was a burger joint up through the mid 70s, I believe.
Okay,
and then I was a barbershop and a hearing aid clinic. Yeah, and so then I took it over and took the wall out and just opened it back up again. And from the outside, it looks smaller than it does on the inside. You get in the inside, and
yeah, there's room in there,
and there's room in there. We've got tables, and
you got the bar.
Yeah, we got the bar set up. So
bar seats about room. 8.
Bar, I have 10 stools around 10. The bar, and then I've got
8 Iras and Corys.
Yeah, and I've got about, 25 seats out at the tables, plus a stand-up area. So,
and a nice little view of where you're brewing.
Yep. Yeah, I kept that open. I just built a half wall there, kind of separation, so you've got the brewing area and a little eye candy
state
there.
State mandate, right?
Yeah. Well, thanks.
It's a nice aesthetic.
There's a lot of mandates that the state mandated. So,
well, we had Eric with Karsbrewing on our last show, and same situation, very small space, and he had to repurpose one room to do both functions. So
he has a removable wall that comes and goes between brewing and being open as a tap room. So,
yeah.
Very small operation.
Yeah. Well, that's a smart idea, and I just did the half wall so people could see.
Well, you had the luxury of the space.
Yeah.
Which is probably weird for you to hear, right?
It is.
All that space.
Considering that it's a fairly small area, but it fills up fast, and it's nice. It's a great environment. I chose not to have any televisions in there on purpose because I'd lived in Europe before. You go to the pubs and stuff, and people are just talking. You just meet people, yeah. And you don't have TVs. And I've noticed that, and a lot of people have even commented about that. They come for the beer, and then they stay for the conversation, too, because there's just people you just meet next to you, and you just start talking. Why? Because you're not zoning out. Well, at first.
Do they keep their phones away? Because everyone carries their own TV with them now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
and that's got to be the issue nowadays. Like, even if you have no TV, someone's...
Yeah. Well, I've had a few people ask me if there's Wi-Fi. I say, no, just for the cash register.
There you go.
And so some people will pull out their phones for a minute or two, but generally, we don't get very good service down in Waseca, so sure. It's
they learn quickly.
Yeah, they learn quickly. It's like
don't put that on your website. No one's going to
know.
Add Wi-Fi.
Yeah, no Wi-Fi. Come for the beer, stay for the conversation.
There you go. Yeah. So when you were introduced to IPAs in the craft world back in 99, 2000 from your buddy, were you drinking like a lot of imports then? You said you spent some time in Europe.
No, actually, I lived in Paris for about 10 years, so I knew my wine. the beer that I drank over there were some Belgian monastic styles, mostly lagers. The French aren't particularly known for their beer other than the monasteries for the most part. I just hadn't acquired a taste for beer until I was about almost 30 when I came back from Europe and rediscovered.
So was that really your introduction to beer
that
in
was
America?
Really, yeah.
Period?
Yeah.
So you have your,
I'd never really cared much for it when I was over there. Cause there was wine and the beer that I drank was, it was lagers. And I'd never really thought about beer being anything other than just, you know, your everyday drink that you could just grab. But it hadn't occurred to me to actually delve into it and check out the flavor profiles and the different varieties or anything.
Complexity to it.
Yeah.
Well, why don't you talk a little bit about what we're sipping on here? You brought a bevy of options here. We're sipping on one right now.
I brought oatmeal stout, the first one that we're tasting here.
It's got a nice roast to it.
Yeah. I kind of like a smooth and creamy, so I don't go overpowering on it. It's not a porter. It's a stout, so I try and pull back a little bit on that and make it accessible to everybody, kind of in the same line that Guinness is. It's mine's
approachable.
Mine's approachable. It is a 6.2%, so it does have a little bit more gusto to it, but it's real smooth and goes down nice in the palate. So
I wouldn't have guessed a 6.2 just because, like you talk about, it is smooth. It's kind of almost hidden in there because it's just a nice. I don't want to say simple. Don't take that the wrong way.
No,
but just like you talked about, a very approachable, easy drinking.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't expect the 6.2 at that point. So
yeah, and a lot of my customers don't either because they're a lot of, you know, I'm the first brewery in Waseca to open. So although a lot of people nowadays have been exposed to breweries through travel and stuff like that, there's still a lot of the locals who've just never been to breweries, or they're just not familiar with micro brew beer. So they come in, give me the lightest thing you got. What is the closest to Busch Light? You know, probably my stout or my Kolsch. You know, I said to try the stout. And, oh, that's dark. I don't want to touch that. But once they taste it, they're, oh, wow, this is surprisingly smooth and easy to drink. Mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, well, it tastes good too. I was like, well, there you go. So I kind of, my first four staple beers that I put on, I didn't want to overpower, like have the hopped up IPA or
it's a new audience.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. It was a new audience and I knew that, but I still wanted to expose them to, the flavor profiles that the micro, brew beer can offer. And so, my stout has always been one of my go-tos. I just worked on the recipe. I like, the traditional type beers. So, I did a Belgian Abbey and the stout and the Kolsch.
Should we open the Kolsch right now?
We can open the Kolsch right now.
So tell us about the Kolsch.
Kolsch is comes from Köln, Germany, where they, they're in competition with all the other lagers that are made in Germany. And it's an ale. It's a German ale. I'm an ale guy. So it finishes off. Yeah, it's refreshing. It finishes off with a, it's got nice crisp and clear. Looks like it's been in a bright tank, but it hasn't. It finishes off that way. And I think it's the German yeast I use with it. I think it's they developed it to be in competition with all the lagers. So it's got a little bit of dryness on it, but it's also got that German-esque, I don't want to say skunkiness, but that a little bit of Pilsner type character to it.
A little fuzziness in the back.
Yeah.
Good fuzziness, though.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good fuzziness.
So was this a good seller through the winter? Because as we warm up a little bit, it's a good baseball beer.
It is. It's a good baseball beer, but it's been, I've had it on since I opened up, and we've only been open for 4 months. We opened back in November, and it's been a hit. People really enjoy it. They come in, they'll ask me, you know, like I said, for a what's the lightest thing you got? I said, well, you know, you can try a Kolsch, and when I pour it, It's got the same color profile as a Budweiser or a Miller or whatever, and so they're already comfortable with the look of it.
It's the aesthetic, right?
Yeah. And then they taste it, and they're surprised because it doesn't taste that, you know, it's got actual flavor to
it. It's got a lot more character
than what more character to it, and
so it's probably surprising to them.
Yeah. It's not thin and sweet at the same time. It comes off with a nice flavor.
Yeah. And it sits at 5.8, and so it's, you know,
it's actually high on the Kolsch.
It's high on the Kolsch, and I said when I was initially making it at home, I was making it around 5.2, and then I made a 5.8 once because I undershot the water, I think, but it turned out great. I said, well, why don't I keep it at 5.8? Because it's still got all the character flavor and profile and everything, and yet it's still light enough to drink on a regular basis. So,
well, this might be a good opportunity to educate the aspiring homebrewers out there. Like, how do you, you just said shot the water, but is there a process to have basically the same recipe but adjust that ABV from a 5.2 to 5.8?
Yeah, in that instance, you're going to hold back either on the water, and you'll use less water per volume.
So it doesn't thin it out as much.
Yeah, so it's not going to thin it out as much. And that can really be when you sparge. You can sparge and then just take it up to where you want to have it. I usually, you can do a gravity reading or a Brix, whichever you're using, and kind of see when you're starting your boil, or before you even start your boil, see where your gravity reading's at, and then do a couple of experiments, go through your boil, and then see where it finishes off. So you'll know where your beginning gravity is, and then where your final gravity's at, and then that'll give you a good way to kind of judge it. You can say, "Oh, all right. Well, last time I was at 1.05, whatever, and it finished it after the boil. It was 1.058. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, then you know that you're gonna gain some on the boil off, and it's gonna go up a little bit. So if you're shooting initially with your water, you just say, all right, I get it up to that, and then I stop, and then I know I'm gonna, after the boil, I'll have my final gravity right where I want it. And it, of course, with experience and everything, take lots of notes.
It's science, right?
Yeah.
Gotta record all those variables and everything you're doing.
Yeah.
To go back to the Kolsch, though, one of the things I really have been liking about Kolsch is, and actually almost, I'm the first one that originally was talking about it as a gateway beer for those people that don't want to do it. That being said, I think it's also nice that it's a style that's all of a sudden being rediscovered. I hadn't even heard about a Kolsch until about 3 years ago when I had a chance to try one. And I know a lot of people talk about introducing it to people that maybe don't know about the light beers, but it is a fun style that you didn't see until a couple years ago. And all of a sudden, it's all over the place because so many breweries are brewing it. Mm-hmm. I think it's a fairly easy one to brew, but it's good to see that everyone's doing and adding their own little bit of flair and style to it. Mm-hmm. And yes, some people will be a gateway, but it's a perfect summer beer. I think it is a perfect lawnmower beer, that kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. It's a good beer style.
Well, it's a classic style. You didn't see it in the availability, you see it now.
Right, but it didn't go extinct, but it definitely wasn't out there. You know,
like any classic recipe, I would say, from Europe, especially in the last 10 years of... Yeah, it's pushed down as the IPAs and the big styles and everything else came through, and then you're seeing the kind of reemergence of these more classic styles, I think.
Yeah, and even the Pilsners and the lagers and stuff like that, I think we're starting to see more of, we don't have to have the IPAs. I'm all in favor of a good IPA, but I'm really enjoying getting a chance for other styles for everyone to enjoy.
Yeah, and I've kind of noticed that myself with some of the other breweries. There's... we went through the IPA phase where everybody went from discovering the IPA to being overhopped, super hopped, and everything.
To exaggerating.
Double, triple IPAs. And then experimenting with some IPAs with a porter or a stout and make that into an IPA and stuff like that. Now we're seeing the movement into a lot of the sours and the saisons and stuff for just to give a different character, flavor profile opportunity to the public. And they're fun to make. So, because they're challenging, so you're like, oh, you know, I've got a new challenge instead of just doing the simple beer over and over and over again, and you're playing around. But I've kind of seen also that trend coming back. That a lot of people they like the traditional type beers, and once they get exposed to them, they're like, oh yeah, you know, I'll try this or I'll try that, you know, that sour or that hopped up IPA and stuff. But it's like easy to drink beer. but it's got a particular character to it. And kind of what I did is I've got my Red Dragon Ale, which is an Irish red. I got my oatmeal stout, which I'm using English on, so England. Then I got my Belgian Abbey. Then I got my German Kolsch. So it's kind of a road trip through Europe. When you come to my bar, you can kind of get a flavor profile of each of these areas.
Was that intentional?
It was intentional.
I mean, that's your philosophy in beer. It's just let's explore.
Yeah, and it's like let's explore kind of the regions. And like I said, I did live in Europe for 10 years, and I when I go back now, now I actually go for the beer. Sure. more so than
research.
The wine. But yeah,
that's research. Our line around here at least. But, it's always research. Yeah.
But I'd noticed, like I said, I really got into microbrew beer back in late 90s, early 2000s, and my wife and I go back regularly to Europe. So every time we'd go there, we'd always go for the flavor profile of the region. Mm. What kind of beer are they producing here? And in Europe, they have a lot of that. Oh, it's changing now, but it up until recently, it's really regional flavor. So you go to this region, all the beer in the bars and restaurants is produced in that region for the most part. They'll have some imports, but you can always get that flavor profile. So I'd make mental notes and say, all right, this is that regional type beer, that type of monastic style that I really like from northern France or Belgium. And
So to go off of that, you're in a small community. You're trying to cater to the people that are coming in. You want something easy and approachable, get people introduced to it. Is there a style that you'd like to get to? Is there a style that you'd love to brew or have brewed but don't really want to put in the tap room yet but would like to get to, you know, in the sense of a complexity or introduce something?
You don't want to sit for 4 months.
my double Belgian Abbey that I brought here, it has to sit for 3 months before it's ready to drink. It just needs to come together and mature. It's 8.2%. It's got a lot of sweetness in it, so you want to get that mixture of the yeast with the caramels and the sweets kind of to come together. And that was one of them, the double Belgian. But I'd like to do a porter and a double IPA, and I've already started moving in a little bit to that. Now, like I said, I'm small, so I can do small batches. So I can do a one-off if I want to and just try. And I've got my initial IPA that I opened up with. Actually, I opened up with a pale ale instead of an IPA. I just did a pale ale. And then I did an IPA, a golden IPA. And I did a red IPA as well. So I've got two of those on tap. And neither one is over 80 IBUs. I kept them lower. So to move into, I will do a, you know, a really hopped up IPA. There is demand for it, but they're starting to get used to it. I've noticed that the regulars who are starting to come, well, they're ready for it. They're now accustomed to the microbrew, and they've got their favorites, but they're willing to try the other stuff now, and I've noticed that. So that's a good sign that even the local culture is starting to develop a taste for microbrew beer and just experiment with some of the other flavors that we've got out there and the other flavor profiles, and really, and I'm there to explain it to them too. So that's
education's big.
Yeah. So I spend a lot of time talking about beer with the customers, and it's great because they get to make beer and I get to talk about beer. So I got the best job in the world. Well, you know, they say you do something you love, you'll never work another day in your life, and it's true. It's like, I don't see it as work. I see it as it's fun. It's sure there's a lot of challenges to it, and you got to keep up on the paperwork and make sure that the government's informed about your excise taxes and everything and how much you've produced, and you got to stay on top of that business side of it. But that said, the majority of the work, quote unquote, is fun. You know, you get to meet a lot of people, and I know everything that's going on in town too, because everybody just starts talking.
Community place,
and it's a small town, so you know.
Well, and we would be remiss if we didn't talk about the fact that you can serenade your customers as well. Because when we were in there back in, what was it, November, December, when we were there?
I think it was December.
Yeah, it was only a couple weeks after you were open, so probably early part of December. But you had the guitar there, and a couple of young ladies with a daughter were sitting at the bar, and they kept harassing you about the guitar, and before you know it, you were singing to them. So you had a little Johnny Cash breaking out there. So
Yeah. I keep the guitar in the back there. Generally, I just keep it for the end of the night, so I can play closing time, and then That was kind of funny. I had a full bar, but we close at 9:30 officially, but it was about 10:30, and I was like, all right, you know. So I played closing time, and they just liked it, so they asked me to play another song, and I had to play it two or three times before finally the boyfriend tells his girlfriend, you know, I think he's playing this to tell us something.
Yeah.
That, you know, it's actually closing time.
It might be a message.
But yeah. But I have a lot of fun. It's a family friendly environment when you get there, and it feels like you're just around a bunch of neighbors and you're talking and having a good time. And it turns out to be that way almost every night. So I'll pull out the guitar, I'll play a song or two, and then we'll go back to talking again and stuff, and got a little music in the background, and people are talking about their lives, their day. There's farmers, there's business people, there's college students from Mankato that come over, or people just looking for that are on a beer trip, where they're coming down from the cities and they want to hit a couple, and we're kind of like the last stop before they have to turn around and go back up again.
Well, you're going to get a little extra help for that, because we've got another one slated to open in Mankato, and another one out in Medelia.
Coming
up soon, and you're going to have one out in the country there. So,
yep, yeah, north of town. So he's a good friend of mine. That's Half Pint Brewing. He should be opening up this summer. Early summer. He's about 5 miles.
Brew Farm, right?
Yep, Brew Farm. And I'm looking forward to that. He's a good friend of mine. He does different varieties of beers than I do. We do have some crossover and stuff. Of course, we've got our own characteristics to our beers. One down in Medelia, that's Lost Sanity Brewing. Sanity, yep. And he's opening up on the 30th.
This weekend.
Caleb.
Yeah, listening good today, guy. Get there, right?
Yeah, if you're listening, go down and check him out. I know he makes good beer. I've had his beer, so I know he's a great brewer. So, first starting out, I'd go over to Kinney Creek in Rochester and talk to Donovan. Great guy, very helpful. I mean, and makes great beer too. So, it's
a real
community. It's a nice community down there, that I did discover that as getting into the actual professional side of the brewing is it's a nice community of brewmasters and brewers who are out there actually doing it. It's not the same type of competitiveness between each other as I experienced when I was working construction. You never tell anybody how much you're bidding for something, because they'll just
undercut you. Right?
With beer, it's, you know, it's a culinary art. So, you know, if you've got an exquisite French cuisine or something over here, and you've got an Italian guy over here, but you've got some people want to go out for pizza that night, some people want to go out for the frog's legs, I guess. But, you know, I mean, you've got that type of environment where we're all making beer, but
it's complimentary.
Yeah, it's complimentary. We're not stealing business per se from each other just because we're close to one another.
It's a little harder to plan a road trip to visit 5 restaurants in one day.
It is.
No, but we're big advocates of every community having its own brewery.
Oh yeah, no, I am a huge fan of it. I think it's great. Like you talked about, you know, the community aspect, everyone coming in and stuff. Yeah. I'm originally from Dundas, so I love going in chapel and running into you know, all the people I know, and we sitting and talking politics or baseball or whatever we may be talking about and stuff. So I'm a big advocate for every small town getting a brewery, whether it, you know, be the large ones or the smallest ones. It's a community spot to meet.
Yeah, I mean, we don't talk about the so-called bubble here too much, but I think we kind of poo-poo the idea, because how many towns, even the town of 400, how many bars are in a town of 400? Like, you can make it work. And obviously there's more costs associated with producing your own product, but it's doable, I think, for most places to sustain a brewery. You mentioned, you know, maybe the cities are getting a little more crowded, so maybe it made more sense to do one in Waseca.
Yeah. Well, it was just, it's not so much that the cities were crowded, it was that we lived up in the city, so I could always find one.
Sure.
So the idea hadn't even crossed my head to go into business and brew full time.
Okay.
Till we got away from it, we were isolated from it. I was like, well, you know, I'm making beer at home all the time now. Why don't I, you know, look into this and see if I can up
missing
my game
component.
And take it up to the next level. And,
Well, the Kolsch was very tasty. We just poured the APA, but I do want to ask you one question about the flexibility of being a one-barrel system. You kind of mentioned that it allows you to do some new things, different recipes, but not only just to explore more, but you have the ability to maybe get ingredients that other people can't get at such a high quantity. You know, if you want to go get peppers or a certain fruit or you mentioned today you're up in the cities getting some ingredients. When you're on a one barrel system, you don't have to have those big contracts necessarily, so you can have that flexibility, right?
Yeah, it does free me up to that. I mean, some people think, you know, go big or go home, and I said, you know, my initial goal was to have a hometown brewery where I could make a living making beer.
Sure.
And if that was functional, then, you know, there's the 3 to 5 year where, all right, if it's working out and everything and we've covered our costs and we're making a profit and people like the beer, which is the most important thing.
Minor factor.
Yeah, minor factor. Plan. You know, are we still making good beer? And people are happy with it and they're coming back for it again and again, or they're asking for it again and again. I thought, well, then it seemed to me that the next step would be, all right, well, you know, maybe get a warehouse or something and take it up to a 3 to 5 barrel system. And when I think you'd really need a 5 barrel system if you're going to do any sort of distribution, because and maybe then bring in some investment and outside investment or other investors and grow it that way. But
4 months in, it's probably hard to think about that right now.
Yeah. I mean, we've been open for 4 months. So, and it's great. You know, I mean, we have the opportunity to add some character and flavor to the local community. I mean, Waseca didn't have a brewery since Prohibition. They did have a brewery before Prohibition. Well, of course, then Prohibition comes and,
minor blight in history.
Yeah. And I think, you know, even a lot of the regulations and everything that I had to persevere, or anybody who wants to do a microbrewery has to persevere through, is the result of Prohibition. Right. There's still a lot of these laws that have kind of been amended or whatever, but they're there because of Prohibition.
There's still a lot of archaic ones on the books.
Yeah, yeah.
Did Waseca already have a lot of the laws and infrastructure in place for a brewery to come in? I know I was going to say a lot of small communities have been saying that they're ready for one and helped them come in, but you were the first and they had to kind of adjust?
Yeah, they were not at all prepared for a microbrewery or expecting one. And so there was nothing on the books. They had 3-2 license and they had a full liquor license. And so I had to work with the city council and go through with them and the city to formulate a microbrewer's license, which they finally got through and put on, and now it's there. So if the next person who comes will be a lot easier. They go to the city, say, "I want to open up a microbrewer." Oh, okay, well, we've got the license right here. You know, and
it's the Mansfield Amendment.
Well, yeah,
let's coin it.
Yeah,
no, got it.
Kind of like the Surly Law.
There you go.
Yeah, no, I had to persevere through that. That was a bit more of a challenge, I guess, for initially, until we get that all worked out.
That's a big education part right there, I bet.
It is. Yeah. Well, it was a huge learning curve. I've had some people come in, "Oh, you're a genius. You opened up the first brewery." No, I'm an idiot. If I knew what I was getting into, if I were a genius, I never would have done any of this, because it was really overwhelming at a certain point when you're trying to parse your way through it. And like I said, I just had a $25,000 investment. I want to encourage people out there, if you do want to do it, you can, but you're going to have to put in a lot of sweat and blood and tears. You know, I tell people, I think God wanted me on my knees praying, because that's where I was at most of the time, thinking, "Oh, dear Lord, if we don't get this next license, I'm out of money. We can't open, and my wife's going to kill me." You know, the kids aren't going to get Christmas presents.
Is that more important than you being killed? I'm just kidding.
Yeah, well,
toss up, depending on the kid.
You want the kids to be happy. You want the wife to be happy.
Yeah,
you know, happy wife, happy life. So,
yeah.
She's been very supportive and patient and everything. And so it was, you just, that first getting off the ground phase is you're just watching your savings go down and down and down. And it's hard to see the light at the end of the tunnel, because there's no... brewer's microbrewer's guide for dummies or anything out there where it's standard. Do this, then go to number 2 and then number 3 and number 4. By the time you get to number 13, you can open. There's none of that. And you talk to the state, and the state will tell you one thing, and then you go and you start doing it, and then they'll ask you, well, where's this? Where's what? You told me to do this. Well, you needed that first. I thought you already had it. Well, you never asked. No. Now, then you got to go back and reapply for something else, which takes another 3 to 6 weeks.
Delays.
And add county and city and everything else.
Yeah, and then...
I still got to say, 7 months, that was pretty... You're definitely the benefiting from all the other breweries who are opening up that time period was a lot longer for many, even a couple of years ago.
It was. In fact, it still is. I think I just, I didn't
grease a lawyer.
I just persevered. I kept following up. I'd follow up with emails, and of course, it's a fine line to walk too. You don't want to offend them too much because then you're on their bad side, and then they can make it put last even longer. Yeah. And at the same time, you want to be nagging enough to let them know, listen, I'm ready to move on to this next step here. Can we get this done? And so it was a lot of just follow up, continually following up, and go and work on the remodeling stuff and try and do that, and then make sure that I had my checklist during every day, and I'd say, all right, well, I haven't followed up with this person in a week, so I've given them a week. I'll just send them a nice email or something, just asking a gentle question or something, and then keeping in the back of their head my name, without trying to. And I just kept persevering with that until all of a sudden October rolled around, and they said, all right, you can open up. And I was like, really? I thought there was one more thing. There was one more thing, and that one more thing was the growler license. Mm. So I knew there was something in the back of my head. But so when we first opened up, I couldn't do growlers. I was flat broke at that point anyway, so I was just happy to be able to serve beer on tap and
get a little revenue.
Yeah, and get a little revenue coming in to make sure I could make the rent and the electricity and the water bill and buy some more grain and some hops,
I don't think most people complain that you didn't have growlers except for that one guy.
It's always the one guy. We know who you're talking about. Yeah. Well, you mentioned Light at the End of the Tunnel. I'm looking at the beer at the bottom of my glass. We're sipping on the EPA now.
Yeah, the EPA.
Walk us through that.
EPA, it's my extra pale ale. It's got some hoppiness up front, but it's more for bittering than it is for like an IPA where you want both. You really want that hoppy profile. And so, like I said, I've been trying to move my local clientele into more varieties of flavors. I opened up just with 4 beers, and now I have 8 on tap. And that's as many as I can really get. Sure. I have a root beer, too. So, I like I said, we're family-friendly, and people bring their kids in, they'll have root beer, the parents will have the beer, and they'll be playing games over on the tables and stuff. It's nice to see. And
does anybody ever ask you how to remove the alcohol from the beer so you can serve it as root beer?
Yeah.
You ever get that?
Yeah.
I feel like some people think that's how it works.
Yeah. I get, do I put caffeine in my root beer or something?
Is it gluten-free?
Yeah, I get a couple of that, but, I'll tell them, no, I don't have the facility for that. You'd have to have an isolated facility for that. So,
should lift that wall up.
Yeah. Well, I'd also need a lot more isolation than that. Yeah. But, my beer's traditional. So the EPA, it's an American EPA. So, like I said, when I go through the list, I say, oh, look, there's Germany, Ireland, England, Belgium, and America. We got to have America in there.
Of course.
So it's an American EPA. It's a golden in character. It's got several grains in it, so it's got a nice flavor profile to it.
I like the body to it.
It's got a nice body.
I see what you're talking about, the hop forward right on the front of it, but then it's really smooth at the back.
And so, developing these flavor profiles with the beer, I like to have a good mesh of all those characters coming together, so not one's overpowering the other too much. And this one right here that you just opened up is the Double Belgian. Mm. And
I had a terrible
It looks
pour,
like
I'm
a Budweiser.
Sorry.
It's so light and crisp and clear, but it tasted. It's a Double Belgian. It's 8.2%. It's got a nice sweetie fruitiness to it.
great smell.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's a Belgian.
Yeah, and it's a Belgian. Yeah, you can get it, but.
I love this sweet malty combo that you get in a Belgian. It's really just a fun flavor.
Yeah.
You probably just started brewing this the last time we were in, then, if you said it takes 3 months in the, in the barrel.
I brewed that one back in early December, and then kegged it and left it down in the cooler to just mature for about 2.5 months.
Been a hit with your customers?
Oh, yes. Yeah. People really like that. It's called the Sanctus Monk, and customers keep telling me I need to have shirts made up that I got monked at Ward House Brewery, because, you know, it's 8.2, so you have a few of those. Yeah. You'll get monked real fast.
Yeah. I know we got to wrap up, but I have one quick question.
Sure.
We never talked about the name. Where does Ward House come from?
Ward House comes with, like I said, we just moved down to Waseca from the cities recently, and a couple of years ago, and we bought an old house from the 1800s, and the locals always called it the Ward House, and so everybody kept telling me where I lived. Oh, you live in the old Ward House. I was like, well, that's where I kind of came up with this idea. We wouldn't have had this idea had we not moved down here. So I said, well, why don't we just call it the Ward House Brewery? And it's got some local name recognition, and people you know this old Ward House from the 1800s, and
that's a great name.
Yeah. And so
it ties to the community without actually tying to the community.
Yeah. And so it's got that local connection. And we moved there. We wanted to support the local community. We wanted to become a part of it and kind of integrate into it and say, you know, we want to be a positive influence on our community. We have 6 children, and so we've got ages from 6 all the way up to 20. So they're in all the schools, all the sports programs around town, and we wanted them to be able to have a good, healthy environment to grow up in, and we wanted to be part of that. And so that was another impetus to doing on the microbrewery, was that, you know, if we could do something that's even small, that's an investment of ourselves into the local community and make it a better place. And I think we have. It's, you know, like I said, it's not a bar. People aren't coming there just to get hammered and then, you know, go out there. They come there for a couple of pints. Now they can get a growler. We do have our growler license.
We're looking at it right now?
Yeah. So you can get a growler.
Actually your house on there?
Yeah, that's
so people can drive the streets of Waseca.
They could drive the streets of Waseca.
I got the picture right here.
Yeah, that's it right there. So, yeah, that's a picture from 1903, actually, that we just kind of etched and put on the growlers.
So you added a couple more wings or what?
Yeah.
Well, that's a great story. It's a great story of the house and the brewery and the family. So appreciate you coming in. Where can people find you online so they can keep up with the story you're yet to write? The beer's coming up, the events you're going to have, and just keep up with what you're doing.
I announce most of them on the Facebook. Mm-hmm. So if you go to Ward House Brewery, we're on Facebook. I also have the website, which is wardhousebrewing.com. And we try and update that. I'm not the most tech savvy, as I told you the other day.
But when you're a one-man show, you wear about 42 hats, right?
So yeah, I get to wear
some things get pushed down the level.
Yeah, so but I do keep up. I try to always respond as quickly as possible to people who have questions or comments on the Facebook. And you can Google us too. If you Google, we'll pop up right in Waseca, you know, breweries in Waseca, and then you can map us there. Our hours are listed there. We're open Thursday through Sunday. Right now, we're looking at more expanded hours during the summer and the longer days. The winter is
always, a little daylight.
Yeah, it's pitch black at 4:30, and you know, people are, you know, when it's 10 degrees out, they're like, well, am I going to go out for a beer, or do I just stay here and, you know, watch TV?
That's why they stop and get a growler and go home.
Yeah. Now, of course,
now you're home.
All winter, I didn't have those growlers going, so we just got those a couple weeks ago. But
now they get the growler and bring it to the summer party.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we're happy to be there, and come on down for a beer.
Yeah, check out Ward House Brewery in Waseca, just a short drive from anywhere in southern Minnesota. It's about central, so you can take a little afternoon drive and head down there. John, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Hey, this is Andrew Burns with the Style of the Week. This week we're talking about sweet stout. We know that stout stands for stout porter, and it means you've got roasted barley to bring out a coffee and chocolate flavor. Well, a sweet stout also includes lactose sugar, sugar that comes from milk. That's why this style is also called a cream stout or a milk stout. But what that means is that lactose makes the beer sweet. Lactose is unfermentable. Yeast can't eat it. So any lactose sugar you add stays into the final beer and leaves a silky sweetness and a creaminess to the stout. If you're the kind of person who likes black coffee, you should probably drink a dry stout. But if you're the kind of person who puts milk and sugar in your coffee, well, a sweet stout is the stout for you.
We will be back in 2 weeks with Genevieve and Steve Pittman with Tanzenwald Brewing Company
Or Tanzenwald, if we say it correctly.
Well, if you really want to say it correctly, it'd be Tanzenwald.
All right, there we go.
There you go. That's what you get for correcting me.
All right.
And they accept all pronunciations because they understand people are going to have no real clue on how to pronounce it. So Tanzenwald Brewing Company here in 2 weeks on April 14th. It is a return show, our second guest to come back for a second time. They're going to be celebrating their one-year anniversary on April 20th, so we're going to have them on the show on April 14th to kind of talk about how year one has gone, what to expect for their big weekend coming up on their first anniversary. And obviously, they're both very fun to talk to. We're in there quite a bit talking to both of them.
They're a little subdued. I don't know if we can get any energy out of them or not. But
We'll have to wake them up a little bit with our high energy. So, no, it's going to be great to have Genevieve and Steve on. We're excited to have them back. As we look to the spring and summer, we'll have a couple of our friends back on for a second show and kind of catch up with people and see how it's going. So we've got them coming up in 2 weeks. That's going to be 11 a.m. Saturday, April 14th. Next week, it's going to be Northfield Outdoors here on 1080 a.m. KYMN Radio. 95 The One, if you're listening on podcasts, tune into there because you're not going to hear that on our podcast channel. But you can check in to 1080 KYMN, 95 The One. Check out the guys on Northfield Outdoors. As always, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at OnTap Northfield. Just search for that or go to Facebook.com/OnTap Northfield, Twitter.com/OnTap Northfield, or Instagram at OnTap with Corey and Ira to find out what photos and activities we're going on. We visit Tillian, both of us individually, separately, on St. Patrick's Day. Didn't work out scheduling-wise for us to meet together. We go there. We go everywhere. We visit places, post photos, and have fun. We also give people insight to what samples are sent to us because we want to make sure we're giving credit to those who are willing to share their beer with us outside of our show. We obviously talk about the show on the show about the beer we're given, but we also promote there, and we post our schedule there. You can find it on ontapnorthfield.com. Also on our Facebook page, you see who our upcoming guests are. We're booked through July, I believe. So we've got a busy next 4 months, been working hard trying to get people lined up. We've got a cidery. We've got a couple live events. Actually, it might be August now that I think of it. A couple live events, obviously very many breweries because that's our focus. But it's a fun collection of people. We're like, it's like the rogue of villains, but none of them are bad.
Yeah, and even if we meet with a couple of our fermentation friends, those are always fun as well.
Now that I think of it, we've got Cannonball's Cheese coming up. We're going to do a fun show with them. They're on the Cannon Falls, focusing on cheese. It won't be a complete departure from the beer, because what we're going to do is we're working with Tillian, which just opened last week officially, or I guess 2 weeks with their soft opening, to do a pairing show. We've been talking about that for a while, of doing kind of a fun show with food and beer and talking pairings. We're not doing the full five-course meal where you get the appetizer, the salad, the entree, and the dessert and all that. But cheese, I love cheese. I think you love cheese.
So we're gonna
work on pairing some cheese with beer and kind of talk about both sides of that. So that's gonna be fun. So all sorts of fun things come up here in the next several months. So look at Facebook, look at our website to see what's coming up there. Otherwise, we'll be back in 2 weeks. We're having fun. We'll see you then. Cheers.